from the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
It was cheaper to do it but through international trade, and that all works fine, but if there's something that, look, if you think this is going to be a long-term issue, then what are you going to do? You're going to say, okay, well, we'll start producing them here.
This is your host, Scott Bertram, and that's Dr. Gary Wolfram, our first guest on today's program. Dr. Wolfram is William Simon Professor of Economics and Public Policy, Director of Economics, and Professor of Political Economy at Hillsdale College. We talk at length with Dr. Wolfram about our supply chain issues. Dr. Wolfram, thanks for joining us again.
Well, thank you for having me again.
We want to discuss the supply chain this time around, and it's become a phrase that people have been hearing more and more in the news. We have supply chain issues. Things aren't here because of the supply chain. When we use that word, that phrase, supply chain, what do we mean? What are we talking about?
Well, what we really mean is that rather than you making everything in your factory, you get parts from all over the world and you then assemble them. So if you're an automobile company and you're making a car here in, let's say you have a factory in Michigan and you're making a car, the chips that you are using to put in that car are coming from China, or they're coming from Vietnam or some other place. And so they have to move through the supply chain. That's why it's called a supply chain. So it'll be produced in a factory in China, and then it'll be put on a truck or something, or a train, and moved to a port, and then it'll be put on a ship. Then that ship will sail to the United States. It'll get to the port of Savannah, or it'll get to the port of Long Beach. Then it'll have to be, and it's all in, and all these things are, put into containers. All sorts of different things are put into the container that's going to get shipped to Long Beach. Then it has to get unloaded from the ship. Mm-hmm. It has to get stored somewhere, at the port. And then a truck has to come and get it and transport it to Detroit. Or a train will have to take it to Detroit. And they try to produce in what's called just in time. So they don't want to have, lots and lots of stuff coming around. What they hope is that when you're building the factory, what happens is the chips get there, you put them in the truck, you put them in the car that you're building, and they go out the door, and you don't have to store thousands and thousands of chips off in another storage facility while you're trying to build the cars. And so that all works, and it works very smoothly until you get a disruption in the supply chain.
I want to come back to that in a little bit, but where do we see, or do we see specific places in the supply chain that are plugged up, that are causing the delays that people are seeing, whether it be for chips or whether it be for food in some instances, or toys, the holidays approach? Where are we seeing those problems crop up?
Well, there's a large problem with regard to chips, because they're used in nearly everything. They're used in your phone, they're used in your car, they're used all over the years, probably used in your furnace or whatever. And so that is a significant problem, has been in this particular part. But there's also a problem in the ports. You've probably, saw about Long Beach and L.A., but there's also a big backup in Savannah, Georgia. And that's part of that's been caused by a shortage of truck drivers.
Mm-hmm.
And so then there's a movement. Okay, that's what we've had, a series of unfortunate events.
Dr. Gary Wolfram here talking with us about the supply chain. You described for us a few moments ago this elaborate multinational train, rail, boat, plane. It's complicated. How does it, how did it work so well? How do all those things come together to make sure the chips are there when they should be, not earlier, and there's not too many? How does it all work?
Well, it's sort of interesting. I mean, it's sort of like, you know, markets work. If you can have a faster way of doing it and it's less expensive, then what will happen is people will start to demand that particular product. And so the chips were cheaper to produce in China than they were here. And for a while, you know, everything was working. The ships were going. I was hiring ships. So I hired storage facilities to store the containers until we came to get them. If everything's working well, then I'll say, hey, that's a cheaper way to do it than if we run into problems. And so, the magic of markets was making that happen. And once you start to get a disruption, then there's a response. But it takes time to do that. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to just turn around and do that in a 6-week time period. So I'm going to guess it's going to, the supply chain issues, they're getting better. So that's, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty in markets, but it was cheaper to do it, but through international trade, and that all works fine. But if there's something that, look, if you think this is going to be a long-term issue, then what are you going to do? You're going to say, okay, well, we'll start producing them here. Now, they'll be more expensive to produce here, but the total cost will be less, mm-hmm. because you won't have this, this worry about the shortages in the supply chain should this happen again. Who knows? Is COVID going to be a long-term problem? Are we always going to, Amazon was out, you know, what did they do? They had a big increase in the wages that they were paying, right? They're giving everybody, bonuses and the like to work here. I think Amazon hired like 45,000 new people or something. There is a response. The problem is not as big as it was, but is it going to be solved in the next 6 months? I'm going to guess it's probably going to take a year to get things more organized and a different way of doing it. And maybe you end up with more truck drivers because wages of truck drivers start going up because now we need the truck drivers. Mm-hmm. And so, it will settle down, but it's going to take a while.
Some people looking at the boats and ships off the coast ask a question like, well, why don't you just fly that cargo in? Avoid the ports, fly it in. Would that disturb the supply chain as is? Too much disruption? And B, is there even the capacity to do something like that? Those ships are massive, and there's so many of them.
And they're massive, and imagine trying to fly the stuff in. It's going to be, I mean, imagine flying your family somewhere over Christmas break. And you'll see, well, what if I was trying to fly, you know, a 50,000 ton container, you know, that's probably just not an option. I mean, to move something from Vietnam or China or wherever you're moving it from, I mean, ship is the cheapest way to move the thing. Because if there's an ocean in between you and the other place, you know, you can't drive, right. drive it. So you gotta, you know, it's probably not, there'll be some things that you could fly. The vast majority of the product is going to have to be moved by ship. And then it's, you know, then you've got, how are we going to deal with this backlog at the ports? And that says, how are we going to deal with the shortage of truck drivers? And that's an issue.
Dr. Gary Wolfram, he is William Simon Professor of Economics and Public Policy, Director of Economics and Professor of Political Economy at Hillsdale College, as we talk about the supply chain. Dr. Wolfram, thanks for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you for having me again.
Up next, we talk with James Golden, longtime producer and call screener for the Rush Limbaugh radio program, about his new book, Rush on the Radio. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
100 years ago, Simpson University began with a promise to be the gateway to world service. 30 years ago, we moved to Reading with a promise to serve the North State, graduating professionals who live and serve our growing community. Today, Simpson University continues to provide a Christ-centered education, graduating students with mature and infectious faith, critical competence, and a ready spirit to thrive as servant leaders around the world and at our backyard. Learn more about Reading's hometown university at simpsonu.edu.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to kcnr1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill we all have to pay? The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson State of Mind.
All of us at Crown Motors want to take this opportunity to thank our veterans, active duty, and first responders for their service to our country and community. We also wish to express our appreciation to the families of these heroes who also have sacrificed to keep our nation and our community safe. Have a wonderful holiday season, and remember that everything you do is so appreciated by your neighbors, community, and the people at Crown Motors of Reading.
KCNR invites you to join us the second Friday of the month starting at 8 a.m. for the Gorman Law Hour featuring local attorney Patrick Gorman, a legal expert when it comes to injured workers, compensation claims, and employee claims. So, if you have a legal question or just wonder whether or not you have a legal issue or problem, talk to Patrick Gorman, attorney at law, during the Gorman Law Hour starting at 8 a.m. the second Friday of the month on KCNR.
We're here with Mortgage Matt from Megastar Financial here in Reading. Matt, what if someone has just recently purchased a home or recently financed, like a year ago?
You know, this last year has been insane. A lot of people with the work from home phenomenon, there's a lot of people moving here from metropolitan areas, which has, you know, affected the supply and demand of this market. That has really boosted the value of houses. So right now, people are looking to remodel their home or consolidate debt. They're able to do that at a lower cost with a cash out refinance than they ever have in history.
Talk about the value of using a local mortgage company and why Megastar Financial.
The nice thing about us being local is our accessibility. You mean people can meet with us in a safe way, but whatever people are comfortable with. We can do an application process online on our website, or we can do an application together over the phone.
Megastar Financial, America's most trusted mortgage company, located at 920 Hilltop Drive next door to Chuck E. Cheese. Call 999-9000 or get started online at megastarreading.com. NMLS 1162668.
Have you been putting off getting your colonoscopy due to COVID restrictions? Well, there's no better time than now. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, colorectal cancer screenings have declined by 86%, and as a result, up to 10,000 more deaths are projected over the next decade. With early detection, colon cancer has a 90% survival rate, and it may even be preventable with a colonoscopy. At Reading Endoscopy Center, our number one priority is the health and safety of our patients, and our center has always been committed to maintaining strict infection control and prevention protocols. Schedule your colonoscopy today by calling us at 530-246-7000 or visiting readingendoscopy.com. Visit readingendoscopy.com.
Hi, this is Dr. Patricia Bay, and my radio show, Therapy in a Nutshell, which airs on Saturdays at 11 a.m. on KCNR 1460 a.m. or 96.5 FM, is a great show for you to listen to and learn how to effectively change your life. We talk about issues such as communication and trust, couples issues, and many more. Also, you can listen to the radio show on my podcast through the Anchor app, which is free and safe. Or you can tune into the iTunes or Spotify podcast and listen to it there. It's a nice show that'll help you throughout the day and throughout your life. So join me for Therapy in a Nutshell, Saturdays, 11 a.m. at KCNR Radio. This is Dr. Patricia Bay, trying to heal the world 1 hour at a time.
You get me every time. Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. For more information about Hillsdale College, if you're a prospective student, a friend of the college, or alumni, head to hillsdale.edu. We're joined now by James Golden. You might know him as Bo Snerdly, the longtime producer and call screener for the Rush Limbaugh radio program. He has a new book out, Rush on the Radio, a tribute from his sidekick of 30 years, hardcover, ebook, audiobook as well. James, thanks so much for joining us.
It is my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I wanted to ask right at the beginning, the Bo Snerdly name, tell people where that came from. Was it simply a name for you? Was it a character? Was Bo Snerdly essentially you with a different name? How should people think about what they heard from you on the Rush Limbaugh show?
Well, there were always Snerdlys with the Rush Limbaugh program from the time the show was syndicated, but no one remembers the other Snerdlys. There was Marvis Snerdlin. There was Mervyn Snerdly. What happened was, at the very beginning, before I started working with Rush, there was an arrangement. When Rush first began with WABC as the flagship station, that they would provide the call screener and an engineer. Well, one of the call screeners that was assigned to the show was a young woman who was extremely liberal, had liberal friends, and didn't want them to know she was associated with anything conservative. So the name Marva Snerdly came up, and that's what she was called. After Marva, there was Mervyn. And Marva didn't last too long. And Mervyn didn't last too long either. So when I was rotated on the show, the first day I was on there, Rush asked me, well, right before the show, I had taken in some stories for him to take a look at, which was usual custom. And Rush asked me, well, you know, everybody's got to be a Snerdly. What Snerdly do you want to be? I didn't have a clue. I looked down on his desk. Back then, we had this thing called newspapers. Daily News. To a back page sports story where Bo Jackson had done something or another. And I looked at it and said, well, okay, Bo. Little did I know that 33 years later, here would be Bo Snerdly still standing among us.
James, take us back to the early years of the National Rush Limbaugh Show, where Rush comes to New York. He's on the WABC there and beginning a national footprint, and there you are working with him. How did those early days of the program work? How did the two of you develop your trust, your working relationship on the program? Did you know early on what it would become?
No, I did not. I had a feeling that it was going to be huge. I think anyone that listened to Rush from the very first show knew that he was different, knew that he had a unique set of skills, and that he was just on fire. I mean, every show was just great. And it was unlike anything else that was on the radio at that time. I met Rush the very first day he came to New York. I don't know about coming to New York. I met him the very first day he was coming into the ABC headquarters where WABC was. I was, in my prior life, the music director of WABC when it was a music station, still the iconic top 40 station in the country.
Mm-hmm.
I one studio producing their last music show, went into another and produced their first talk show. I knew the president of ABC Radio Networks, Ed McLaughlin, who turned out to be, after he retired, one of Rush's broadcast partners. So Rush was walking in with Ed on his first day there. I was coming out of the building. I met them both, and we had a conversation. During the conversation, as I understood what Rush was getting ready to do, I made the remark, wow, it sounds like you're going to be bigger than Paul Harvey. Little did I know that Rush would completely upend everything in radio, and also little did I know that my life would be intertwined with his. As I mentioned earlier, I wasn't the first call screener to work with him. I was about the third or fourth. And once we were on the show, everything clicked. Now, up before that time, I was working on other shows, but anytime I saw a story that I thought would interest Rush, I would take it to him.
Hmm.
Develop a friendship very early on. But everybody was friends with, everyone loved Rush. You know, he was just such a, it's so different than what people might think. Tongue-in-cheek bombastity on the air wasn't who he was off the air. He was really a quiet guy, reserved, really humble, always so polite to everybody. Everybody loved him, and everybody loved Rush, and everybody with ears for radio knew that this was something special. So when I worked on the show, when I first began with Rush after that first day, I mean, we clicked. We were both very passionate about radio. I have been since I was a 14-year-old kid and first walked into a radio station. And Rush, of course, was just Mr. Radio. I mean, he understood the dynamics of radio, meaning the radio performance. He understood all the nuances of the business. He understood radio inside out. So what a pleasure to work with him.
Talking with James Golden, his book is Rush on the Radio, a tribute from his sidekick of 30 years. Listeners, James, of course, felt like they knew Rush and were friends with Rush. That is the intimacy of the great radio host. You being so close to him for so long, how much do you think listeners knew the real Rush? Did it come through in the way that you experienced him on a day-to-day basis?
Yes, and that is because Rush engendered trust. He revealed a lot of his own life, the struggles that he went through. No, every human being has flaws, and Rush was open about his flaws. But at the same time, and that made him vulnerable, but he did it in such a way to engender trust. Also, you know, Rush did things that helped the audience trust him. He would give the other side of a story and then go into detail as to why he was in opposition to it with news. So you got, long before there was fair and balanced, that was the presentation that Rush was doing. He wasn't just saying something, I believe this, I believe this, and I believe this person is wrong or that person is wrong. He explained their position from the news reports and then nuked. He also was really open about his values and what he believed.
Mm-hmm.
And very persuasive. So when he spoke about something, it resonated. And that also conferred to the advertisements. When Russ would do a live spot, the advertisers saw their product most of the time take off like never before. That's the reason we had new advertisers on the show at the time that later would become household names and nationwide companies. Because Rush had earned that kind of trust with his listening audience.
James, we'll pause right there. We'll come back in a moment and talk more about Rush, you, and the new book, Rush on the Radio. James Golden with us. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
At Shasta Regional Medical Group, we're focused on the health matters that matter to you, like having a primary care doctor you trust. Our physicians put patients first. They take the time to listen to your needs and concerns, and they provide the information you need to make good decisions about your own health. At Shasta Regional Medical Group, you have an integrated network of caregivers and specialists working to serve you in a compassionate, patient-centered environment. We're conveniently located right across the street from Shasta Regional Medical Center. To make an appointment, call Shasta Regional Medical Group today at 605-4260 or visit us online at ShastaRegionalMedicalGroup.com. Shasta Regional Medical Group. Your primary care is our primary concern.
When people ask me for a recommendation for a heating or air conditioning company, I always say Alliance Heating and Air. Why? Well, they've been taking care of our HVAC system for 14 years. Professional, friendly, and willing to go to the extra step for their customers. I have found no problem too difficult or too minor for them to repair. I recommend Alliance Heating and Air with no reservations. You can reach them at 530-221-2642 or online at homecomfort.org. And they have 24/7 emergency assistance. Alliance Heating and Air.
A building that's meant to last is not built overnight. And for centuries, the cornerstone has been crucial to guide each brick and wall that comes after. A strong community relies on many cornerstones. So at Cornerstone Community Bank, we've taken our name to heart. Whether it's your business or your family, we'll provide the financial cornerstone that you need to build on. We're local. We're community. We're your cornerstone. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Premier, your friendly oil change.
Many accidents are caused by worn wiper blades. Let's face it, it's just uncomfortable when you're driving in the rain, snow, fog, and everything else in between with worn blades. At Premier Oil Change, when you buy one wiper blade, you get the second blade free. Yes, now through January 15th, you buy one wiper blade and get the second one free for as little as $15.99. At Premier Oil Change, we make maintaining your car easy. There's no need for an appointment. You don't drop your car off or wait. Just pull in, enjoy a free beverage and free Wi-Fi while our trained technicians perform our comprehensive 30-point certified service. Earn free oil changes with Premier Rewards. Learn more at PremierOilChange.com or visit us in Palo Cedro. Premier is in the Holiday Market Shopping Center or in Redding on Lake Boulevard next to Waterworks Park and our newest location in Anderson across from Round Table Pizza. All locations, you get a free car wash with every oil change. Home of the friendly oil change.
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week, we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has a chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
I expected to be a lot easier.
I didn't know what step to take next.
I was transitioning from the military. I was a vehicle gunner.
An avionics specialist.
I missed my unit, my family.
Playing with my daughter, I'd felt like a stranger.
I didn't have a clear sense of what to do next.
And then I thought, if I'm going through this, other veterans have gone through it too, right?
So I reached out, and I saw that I wasn't alone.
Go to MakeTheConnection.net to learn how other veterans have overcome the challenges of transitioning out of the military.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram, talking with James Golden, or Bo Snerdly, Rush Limbaugh's producer and call screener for 30 years. His new book is Rush on the Radio, a tribute from his sidekick of 30 years. James, Rush was, as you point out, just a radio genius, and he talked often about his special relationship with his radio affiliates, his stations that have been with him for 30 years, some from the very beginning. He did the TV show for a little while, but this was a show that was never on satellite radio. Didn't do a lot of podcasting. There was the Rush 24/7 audio available, of course, but Rush really wanted his show to be something experienced communally, that everyone experienced together at the same time on the radio. That was special. You continue that at 77 WABC in New York.
you guys have conversations about that off the air, about why radio was the perfect medium for a guy like Rush?
Rush talked about that, and he not only talked about it with me off the air at times, but he talked about it on the air, that he never wanted to cannibalize those affiliates who enabled him to be so successful. He respected the radio affiliates. He respected the decision that they made to choose him and was honored by it. And he valued the relationship that he had with each and every radio affiliate in the market. He had 600 stations. You could name a call letter of some stations. He'd know exactly who they were and pretty much when they came on board. He loved the radio business. He loved the affiliate stations that picked him up. He was honored to have them as an affiliate, and he let it be known to them and to those of us working with him how deeply he cared about maintaining that relationship.
There were critics, of course, James, and you write about some in the book, and today's cancel culture philosophy certainly was in effect years prior when it came to the Rush Limbaugh program. It was always funny for fans who heard these critics that they never seemed to actually listen to the show. They didn't know anything about Rush or the program. I was a program director that carried Rush's show. And just thinking back to the Sandra Fluck incident, that seemed to be some sort of flashpoint. That was the heaviest that we ever felt sort of this push from the left to get Rush off the air. They thought that was the opportunity to do so. They threw everything in the kitchen sink at affiliates, at program directors to try to convince them to do something about it. Internally, did you guys feel that pressure? Were you insulated? Was there ever a time when you thought that it was really heaviest for you guys?
I think that you identified correctly. I think probably the biggest public pressure maneuver, which was the Sandra Fluck incident. And I know personally how it was misconstrued. I know what he was trying to say, what he was saying.
Mm-hmm.
And to integrate her, it was to point out the fact that this particular person was asking for the government to take care of her individual needs. And what does that make her? He apologized for that, something he rarely did in the life. But this was coming into an election year, and it was the Obama machine in full gear, along with the people over at Media Matters who never stopped their endless criticism. And most of the time, of course, Media Matters is completely factually wrong, takes things out of context on purpose. And the left did try to cancel him. So, yeah, we kind of felt that one. That one, yeah, there was a lot of pressure, and people were worried about it because they were attacking the advertisers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an pain. Rush also, though, did something because of that I think helped many people besides the show. We did a real deep dive, he did, into who these critics were.
Yes.
And what we was there were people on Twitter that were a small group that were amplifying themselves by the use of bots to make it appear before advertisers that there were hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands of people complaining, when in fact it was just a small group. And he exposed that on the air. Now, there are still a lot of corporate heads that don't know that because their people in their own communications department keeps them isolated from what really goes on. But a lot of the public is beginning to understand that many of these pressure groups on the left do not have the numbers they claim to have, but they wield an extraordinary amount of power because their critical talking points are amplified by an unquestioning mainstream press who has the same agenda that they do. And this cancel culture until recently was used to take out their political enemies. The thing is now it's backfiring.
Mm-hmm.
And liberals are finding themselves canceled, and not so much conservatives. So this whole cancel culture thing, Russ was one of the first people they ever tried to use it on. I remember Elizabeth Slaughter back in the early 90s tried to congressionally take Russia's freedom of speech away with something called the Hush-Rush Bill. That's
right.
What we called it, where legislatively they wanted to deny him a place on talk radio. These people on the left will stop at nothing, absolutely nothing, toward their acquisition of power and to become the only voice and they want to literally squelch any kind of dissent or free speech, all while claiming that they are tolerant. They are the most intolerant people in this country.
Final question for James Golden. You might know him as Bo Snerdly from Rush's show. His book is Rush on the Radio, a tribute from his sidekick of 30 years. When Paul Harvey passed away, no one really replaced Paul Harvey, James. Rush is that same sort of singular talent, truly irreplaceable. How do you see his legacy continuing? What do you want to see in these coming years? Certainly the Rush Revere books will live on, and his charity efforts will live on. How do you see Rush's legacy, both, I guess, personally and within the industry?
In the industry, I don't know, because this talk radio family, all of us in talk radio, you look at the amount of money that we have raised, you look at the philanthropy that came from Catherine and Rush to the families of fallen first responders. When children lose their parents in the line of duty, they're not worried about the politics. Their worries go more towards, how am I going to maintain the payments on this house? And that's what Rush and Catherine and others in our industry, so that part will live on. I think Rush's efforts in education will live on. His original story of Thanksgiving has spread like wildfire.
Mm-hmm.
Even though but this year, the story is still being told. We have people now, people ask me, well, what about the people that are in his time slot? I don't know Dan Bongino personally, but we've communicated on Twitter, direct message many times. He's a wonderful human being. I know Buck, he was a guest host, and he and Clay are doing a great job. They're holding on to a lot of stations that we had.
Mm-hmm.
Eric is also a former guest host and a friend. And so I'm in a position where I can wish everybody well and hope that they succeed, and there's certainly room for everyone to succeed. Will there be another Rush? No. But you can see the same kind of fearlessness that Rush had. Look at Tucker Carlson. He comes under so much fire, but yet he stands firm and does the kind of stories that he thinks are right for him to do. That's the same trait Rush had. Look at Charlie Kirk. Charlie Kirk from Turning Point USA. So Rush's legacy is going to live on for generations to come in people that we are just beginning to see emerge, in some people that are already well-known figures in the talk radio and television space. But the Limbaugh legacy, his legacy will live on in countless ways. I do believe that.
James Golden, also known as Bo Snerdly from the Rush Limbaugh program, his new book is Rush on the Radio, a tribute from his sidekick of 30 years, hardcover, ebook, audiobook. You can go to jamesgolden.com to order or to find more, jamesgolden.com. And you can find him, too, at 77 WABC in New York. James, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you so much, guys. You know what? This has been such a pleasure. I would sure like to come one day and hang out with you guys.
I think that would be a fantastic idea to make that happen. James, we appreciate it.
All righty. Take care now.
Up next, we talk with Elizabeth Genovese, a 2006 graduate of Hillsdale College, recently back on campus as part of our Visiting Writers series. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
It's a bright new day. The sun is shining. The birds are singing. And there's never been a better day to try Mount Shasta spring water. Hi, I'm Bob the Drop. I come from a protected spring at the base of Mount Shasta. I'm bottled at the source. It doesn't get more cool and refreshing than that. And it's delivered right to your door. Yep, pure and simple. Naturally the best. Start your bright new day by calling 1-800-922-6227 to order some of the best tasting water on the planet. Mount Shasta spring water.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping in our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to a North State with no more homeless pets.
Hi, this is Whitney from Timberline Heating and Air Conditioning. On behalf of the whole Timberline team, we wanted to take this opportunity during this special time of year as we gather to spend time with our family and friends. It is also a time to remember all of our veterans and those currently serving our country. So we join with KCNR for Operation Holiday Salute, sending peace, hope, and happiness this holiday season to all our veterans and service members. From the Timberline Heating and Air family, happy holidays.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Happy holidays from our Home Helpers family to yours. At Home Helpers, we are proud to help your loved ones celebrate this holiday season from the safety and comfort of their own homes. We are equally proud of the men and women who can't be with us. To the bravest among us, far from home serving our country this holiday season, to all members of the military in all branches, past and present, and those who made the ultimate sacrifice. With respect, gratitude, and love, we thank you. Happy holidays from all of us at Home Helpers. Life takes you to unexpected places. Love brings you home.
Hi, I'm Janet McCarn, one of the owners of Orchard Nutrition Center. We are proud to be joining KCNR in sending holiday greetings and wishes to all our veterans and those currently serving our country and to their families waiting at home. It is a huge sacrifice they make for our country, and Orchard Nutrition Center is proud to honor our veterans every day with a 10% in-store discount. Sending warm wishes from the Orchard Nutrition Center family to all our veterans today and all year long. Thank you for your service.
As part of Operation Holiday Salute, Redding Kia would like to take this moment to thank our veterans and those currently enlisted in the military for their service. Since 2006, Redding Kia has set out to be the premier automobile dealership in the North State. There's always a military incentive rebate on all new 2022 Kias at Redding Kia. Test drive the 2022 Kia Sorento today. Redding Kia, home of the 20-year, 200,000 limited mile powertrain warranty. 418 East Cypress Avenue, RedingKia.com.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere Ag and Turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
The YMCA is welcoming new members to come and enjoy the many choices the YMCA has to offer. The YMCA has a variety of fitness activities, including swimming, aqua aerobics, cardio, weights, group power classes, and booty yoga. There's over 100 classes to choose from. The YMCA is so much more than a gym. The Y is a community. Join the YMCA. 246-YMCA or go online to sfymca.org.
Hi, I'm Rob Burrows from the Homeward Bound Military Family Support Services. Your donations helped us deliver 125 Thanksgiving dinners to military families in need. We're taking donations for Christmas meals December 18th and 19th. Again at Save Mart on Turn Creek Road in Redding. Donate hams, turkeys, and non-perishable dry goods and canned goods that would make a wonderful Christmas dinner. Cash accepted also. Keep the dates December 18th and 19th at Save Mart from 8 to 8 both days. And thanks for your support.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We say hello and thank you to our listeners at WBCK 95.3 FM in Battle Creek, Michigan. Thank you for listening to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. We're joined now by Elizabeth Genovese,
a 2006 graduate of Hillsdale College and back on campus as part of our Visiting Writers series. She currently teaches English at a community college in Tennessee, teaches community creative writing, also has published three collections of stories, A Different Harbor, Where There Are Two or More, and Posing Nude for the Saints. Elizabeth, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You mentioned to me before we started, it's your first time here back on campus in about a decade or so. What do you notice? What's different?
Well, I've never seen the gorgeous chapel, the new student union where the cafeteria is. I mean, the campus looks absolutely incredible. It's just beautiful from start to finish. And I checked out the insides of all those new buildings, and they just seem like really wonderful student spaces, places for people to study and get to know each other. It's lovely.
So on your writing, you recently were an O. Henry Prize winner. People who are not familiar with the literary world, what does that mean? And what did you write to be considered as a O. Henry Prize winner?
Well, the O. Henry, it's an anthology that's been around for a very long time. And it's published once a year. And what happens is literary journals kind of across the country, editors will nominate a story or two for the prize and send them in to this committee. And then the committee will look at those stories and pick, I can't remember exactly how many were in the last one, but, you know, somewhere between, like, say, 10 and 15. And then if they're chosen, then they get published in that anthology. It's a, you know, prestigious award. It's a nice thing to have on your CV when you're reaching out to publishers and presses. And the story that was nominated was my piece, Irises, which is in my third book, Posing Nude for the Saints. And I had submitted that to the Cimarron Review, and the editor there really loved it, and she put it forward as a nominee for the O. Henry, and that's how that happened.
So how would you describe your writing, your stories in your published works? Where do you find your inspiration?
I would call it realistic literary fiction. It's very character focused. You know, my process is, it's actually a hard thing to describe. It's not something that I do kind of from an intellectual point. It's more a matter of listening to dreams, listening to sort of, I call them messages kind of coming through the unconscious. And the way I see it is that, you know, a writer is, you always have your antennae up and you're picking up signals from the world around you, images and, you know, thoughts about people. And these things start to constellate in your unconscious, the larger significance of what you see and hear. And you incubate those things. And then, you know, one day you just wake up and you realize you're on the cusp of an actual story. And these aren't just loose images anymore. They're actually creating a picture. And that's when you start writing. So that's kind of what the process looks like for me.
How do you know? How are you comfortable when one of your stories is finished, that you think you've completed this image, this thought that's come to you? How do you know when it's done?
It's a very visceral feeling. I've written stories before where they're technically finished, but I don't feel right about it, you know, for weeks after. It's a sensation you have when there was something you were supposed to do today and you forgot to do it. You know it's not really done. And when I have that sensation, I give myself some distance, and then I'll come back to it, and I usually see what's wrong, and then I can kind of tackle that problem and resolve it. I guess in a way, though, you know, probably most writers would tell you that nothing ever feels finished in the sense of being perfect. You never feel that you're happy with something. And, you know, the people who are close to me, my husband, you know, they give me a hard time because I'll finish something and, yeah, I'll think, okay, I think this is pretty good. And then 6 months later, it's, oh, you know what? I hate this. This is terrible. I'm not going to submit this anywhere. And that's sort of your classic writerly self-loathing.
Mm-hmm.
So things might be technically done, but I think you always have a sense that you can make it better.
You also do some private writing coaching mm-hmm. as well. When you're working with these writers, what are some of the common hurdles, problems that they have that you end up helping them or working with them to get through?
Well, I would say most people probably expect that answer to be somewhere along lines of issues of craft, but it's really more issues of mentality. And it seems to me that new writers tend to fall into one of two categories. They're on two different sides kind of the spectrum, where over on one side, they're very orderly people, and they tend to over-intellectualize the process of writing, so they want to be completely in control. They want to have both hands on the wheel all the time. These are the types of writers who want to outline the story before they write it down to the last paragraph. And those people, you have to kind of teach them or train them to, as I said before, kind of have their ear open to the mysterious and to the unconscious and to dreams and to things that are kind of inexplicable rather than something they can fully control. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you have the extreme opposite, the writers who their work ends up being, it's vivid and it's interesting, but it's more sentimental, or it's kind of a loose cannon where they don't have a sense of direction. There's no unifying purpose. And that's because they don't have enough of what the people on the other side have. Mm-hmm. They're not intellectualizing enough. They're not thinking about, okay, what is my purpose? What's the master effect I'm after here? So it's all about addressing that and kind of trying to find a balance between the two. Once you have a little of both, then you can create something that's unified and has purpose, but also has that kind of mystery, that thing that haunts people for weeks after they read it.
You're here talking with some of our English students, some of our creative writers here on campus. What do you hope they will remember from your message? What are some of the questions that they're asking you?
Well, you know, I guess I'm really hoping that they will be encouraged to pursue writing, the ones who are genuinely interested, and there are definitely people here who are. And in the submissions I saw, I did actually get to see some fiction from quite a few students, and there's real talent there, genuine talent. I was really impressed with what I saw, with their attitude, with, you know, their mentality. And what I've been trying to convey is how incredibly important it is that we have conservatives who contribute to the arts, because the literary arts in particular, they've been so completely hijacked by the ideologically possessed. It's getting harder and harder now to find a freshly published novel or story that doesn't have an agenda. And no one is better prepared to write good quality literary work than a Hillsdale graduate, because they have the background. They have the foundations. I know so many people who they call themselves writers, but they don't read. They don't know canonical literature. They don't know the classics. They even have a disdain for those things. There's no reverence for the past. And Hillsdale students have this incredible gift where even if it was never in their minds to study creative writing like it was with me, they've been studying it all along because they've been reading the best literature that's ever been written. So they're already kind of taking it into their bones what good literature looks like, and, you know, how to develop a character and how to write a novel that fulfills its promise. And I hope that they use that background to create something.
Is your path into sort of the writing field and what you've done and having your works published and publishing these collection of short stories, is that a repeatable path? Is that a path that students here can emulate?
Yeah, I believe it is. I mean, most writers are, they're going to be very negative if you ask a question like that and say, oh, you know, this is the field of starving artists where getting a job is almost impossible. It depends on how hard you're willing to work. If you're really serious about this and you're committed, this isn't something you dabble in. It's not a hobby. Yes, I know I do believe that these students can get their work published someday, or perhaps maybe they choose a different route and they create a literary press, which would be just as amazing, if not more so. And, you know, they can go get degrees in fine arts and then teach in schools where they can make a difference, and they can teach new writers and teach them the literature they need to move forward. So, yeah, I would never say, you know, this is a one in a million situation that I have, because I'm just not that special. I work really hard, and that's about the end of it. So if you work hard and you have a Hillsdale background, I think all these things are possible.
You can find more at ElizabethGeneviseFiction.org. Her three collection of stories, A Different Harbor, Where There Are Two or More, and Posing Nude for the Saints. She's on campus here as a visiting writers, part of the visiting writers series, and a 2006 graduate of Hillsdale College. Elizabeth Genovese, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Dr. Gary Wolfram from Hillsdale's Economics Department, talking about the supply chain issues in the country. James Golden, also known as Bo Snerdly, Rush Limbaugh's former producer, on his new book, Rush on the Radio. And Elizabeth Genovese, 2006 graduate of Hillsdale College, part of our visiting writers series here on campus. The Radio Free Hillsdale Hour is recorded at the studios of WRFH, the student-run radio station at Hillsdale College. You can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews, including James Golden this week, or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, or Amazon Podcasts. Search for The Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Follow the show on Twitter at Hillsdale Radio and find us on Facebook. Email us your thoughts at radiohour@hillsdale.edu. The assistant producer of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour is Nate Esbenshade. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.